We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Hi, everybody. Todd McKim, and welcome to our first edition of Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics for the 2020-21 athletic calendar, which at this moment in time is still intact. We're ready to go. We've got green lights going, and we're excited. Because it's been a long time, and I know, Coach, it's been a long time since we had the opportunity to talk to you. A little bit later on, we'll hear from Athletic Director Jim Knowlton, get his thoughts about what the athletic department has gone through and how they're helping student-athletes and coaches make this thing happen. But we did that interview with the Jim prior to the notification of the basketball team, men's basketball, having to shut down for a couple of weeks because one member of the team tested positive for COVID. So start in that regard, Coach, and in that, I mean, it's like pins and needles, isn't it? Every day you go to bed and you hope you have the same people tomorrow that you had today. What's it been like for you guys?
It truly is a day by day test to see how we can, you know, continue to move forward and really keep the focus on controlling our environments the best we can. Because it's fragile. I mean, I think we all know that. We see what's happening across the country, within different conferences and football teams and NFL, and you know, nobody's got the perfect answer. But I think it just maybe brings awareness to all of us when things like this happen that it's very, very fragile.
Yeah, it certainly is, and I know you guys have done a lot to ensure that you can continue and go forward. Can you detail some of those procedures that at least right now you have to go through to make sure you can have enough guys to practice and the coaches are there and the trainers are around and student managers and so forth?
Yep. There's really a protocol we follow as soon as you get to the building, how you check in. And then you have mandatory testing, as many as 8 tests a week for some people. And there's kind of different groups on that. But our sports med people and the department's really, they've done a great job of providing some guidelines for us. And, you know, we got to do our best to follow those. And when they're here at the stadium, you know, we get a chance to, everybody's here, you get tested, you can go to meet the outdoor meetings and then practice. And then I think the difference is they got to go home, you know, and guys live in apartments and they got to get some food, and everybody's really got to be on high alert, you know, when you're out in public, and that we're vigilant about protecting ourselves and then our team, so we have the opportunity to play.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we've seen over the course of the summer and the fall at the professional level, teams have approached it in different fashions. The NBA had a bubble where they had everybody in one basic place, and there was really very little or none interaction with the public. Major League Baseball, a little bit different because they couldn't do that. They had to travel to go to games, as you will as well. Hockey was pretty good. Women's NBA, WNBA was very good. Golf, a kind of a different situation. So, you know, what have you told the young men about going out? Because, I mean, these are 18 to 22-year-olds, and they're not going to just sit in their apartments or their shared housing. What have you told them?
Well, I think just the understanding of how, you know, decisions that we all make outside the building can really impact so many people and your teammates and family members, and really just challenging our self-discipline on what we're doing outside the building. You know, really having this, you know, this team mentality that in order for us to go out and have the chance to compete and play these games that we all love playing and want to play. And in order for us to do that, that it takes really good decision-making and self-discipline outside the building, and trying to control our environment the absolute best that we can. Is it 100% foolproof? I don't know that it is. I think guys on our team have a good understanding of that. You know, there's a lot of people on the team, and it's going to take everybody kind of doing the right things for a period of time here so we can get to those games and have a chance to play them.
Yeah, it was mid-March when we got the word that everything was shut down. You had already conducted 4 spring practices, so that was good, better than some teams around the country, no question about that. Tell us about the emotional and mental roller coaster that everybody went on, and how you tried to help everybody involved with your football program to get through it. Because at one point in time early, people thought, like, this will kind of go away. We should be back, you know, sometime in the summertime. We'll have fall camp. We'll start in early August. And then it got pushed back. Then you got the word that maybe we're not going to have any football at all. Then you got the word we are going to have some football. How did you handle that as a head coach?
You try and stay as steady as possible. And one of the most challenging things that I found was, you know, our job and our role is to have answers for our players and our team. Like, what are we doing next? What, you know, be on a schedule. I mean, most of us have been on a schedule for most of our lives, and the players the same. And when you don't have certainty on things, that's what I think is really difficult. And, you know, you're looking for certainty and it's really not there. And you're kind of asking questions that people don't have the answers to. So that was a challenge. And then just trying to stay real level about it and not to get too high with the highs or low with the lows. We had off-season workouts, and they were in an environment, was really an opt-in situation, meaning if you were involved in those workouts, meaning you're comfortable with the protocol, the COVID protocol, then we would ask you to follow through on all of them and, you know, be there and be in tuned and work a certain way. And if you didn't want to be there because you were concerned with COVID protocol and didn't feel, you know, comfortable being there, then that's okay. But if you're in, you're in. And so I think, you know, as we worked through that and guys had questions and families had questions, our department was really supportive throughout that entire process and helping us navigate that. Because there was, as we all know, we there's a lot more questions that we all have than there are answers to. The one thing I think that showed up later in the summer was, and one of our coaches brought this to my attention, there's this term called alert fatigue. I think Peter told me about it. And basically, there's only so many times you can tell somebody, hey, be ready to to get going tomorrow. Be ready to get going tomorrow. You know, it comes from the military where they, you know, there's only so many times you can be ready to go tomorrow. And so we really tried to balance that as best we could, knowing that we weren't sure of what the outcome would be with the season. And then they told us that the Pac-12 made the decision to postpone the season, announced it. So a lot of us made decisions, a lot of schools made decisions at that time, kind of preparing for January, and then it changed. So that was a challenge, but I really commend the people here and our players for being agile enough to get back going, because they were excited to play, but to get back going and start practicing.
You mentioned practice, and you're having what people would consider a fall camp, but it's really not a fall camp, because when you had those sessions in years past, you pretty much had kind of an open window to practice and to have team meetings as long as you wanted during the course of a day, unless, of course, you were a school like Cal, maybe started school a little bit early. But some of the quarter system schools that normally don't start until the end of September, I mean, it was a little different. Now you're in a situation where you're in class session, school is in session, and you have that 20-hour window per week to work with the players, and yet you can't get them all together in the same room. They've got to all be kind of separate to some extent. You can only have 75 at a time on the practice field. So you've had split practice sessions. How have you managed that?
Yeah. So we're able to, the team meeting that we're all accustomed to, that we would have usually 1 to 2 a day during a fall camp, you know, that really was out. We couldn't do that. Our special teams meetings we do on Zoom. Our position meetings, because they're smaller groups, we do outside in the concourse of the stadium. So we're able to get some instruction there. But again, it's 6 feet apart, and you know there's rules that we have to follow. And then we get to practice with 75 people, 75 players, and we get that practice. And then at the end of practice, we can talk as a team. Kind of, again, if everybody takes a knee and at the end of practice, we talk about some team topics there. We do a lot, you know, quite a bit over, virtually, and send things out, maybe schedules that we would talk about prior now get sent out to their phones or tablets. And we have that second practice that we have with our developmental crew. So it is different, but you know, kind of what we keep saying is, if this is what we need to do in order to play, then we're going to find a way to do it. So that's how we've approached it.
You know, over the course of the shutdown, basically, and we're currently using Zoom to record this interview, you were able to have interaction with your players, your coaches that are trying to install things, like Coach Musgrave's trying to install a new offense. You got 4 new coaches on your staff. Did, in some respect, from a mental standpoint, did that give you a quicker period, a quicker adjustment to some of the new things that you're doing as compared to in the past, where maybe you didn't have that capability?
Yeah, I think everybody, starting in March and April, became more and more proficient on Zoom and virtual meetings. So we were ahead of the game that way by necessity. And I will say, the players, this is their world. I mean, they took to the Zoom and the virtual things much quicker than the coaches did.
Or broadcasters like myself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's been an adjustment there, but they're doing well with it because I think they're just kind of more in tune with that type of communication. There are still things, I think, that are, you know, there's nothing quite like being face to face with somebody. I wouldn't say that teaching is, you do the best that you can. You know, I don't think we would ever choose to do everything all virtually if we had the choice, but we don't have the choice right now. So we're doing what we can with the virtual teaching and meetings as necessary.
I assume the players are ecstatic. They are 2/3 of the way from the start of practice until the first game against the Washington Huskies, November 7th, next Saturday, 7:30 ESPN. So we've got Pac-12, late night Pac-12 You guys will be involved with that. You get great exposure for that first game too on ESPN as well. Oftentimes there's a period of time in camp where there's a bit of a lull. Players are getting tired of banging each other. Coaches trying to find ways to motivate each and every practice. Have you had less concerns about that this year because of everything that's happened than maybe in years past?
Yeah, I would say there hasn't really been that. The practices, we've adjusted a bit compared to a traditional fall camp due to the circumstances. And I think they feel the urgency of, you know, getting prepared to play physically and mentally. So I don't know that we've had kind of that lull. It hasn't felt like that. We've had some practices that are a little better than others, but I think that's pretty common. So I do know that they're going to be excited to play. I mean, at a certain point, I mean, we're practice 16 right now, and we have basically 9 more practices before we get to play, and they'll be ready by that time, because after 24, 25 practices, you're usually ready to hit somebody else.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. How has it affected recruiting? Because during the summertime, you got a lot of commitments, and they all kind of came in a flurry, which is good. And you're off to a terrific start. Maybe only have a couple of spots still left for the upcoming signees. How has it affected what you do and how your message gets out? Because you're not having players on campus. And now you're not going to have players that will have tape, because a lot of places they're not playing football. So how does it affect the recruiting?
Well, the virtual part of it, just like it is with our players, has become really the number one way to communicate, and even how we show them about our campus and these virtual visits, which have been really productive. We were fortunate to have quite a few of those guys on campus before the shelter in place went down in March. So they had been here either last fall or even winter and early spring. So we had quite a few people on campus already, but the virtual visits have become a big part of it. And then, just some great work by our staff in-house and keeping those guys engaged. And as I mentioned, I think the younger generations, like the kids in high school, it's nothing for them to get on the phone and FaceTime or have a virtual conversation. It's just part of, part of what they do. So the adjustment really was on us. And as long as it's consistent throughout the conference and the country, then those are the rules we're playing by.
How does it affect like the 2022 class? Because you don't know what's going to be the situation next spring and summer, and guys will not have played. You won't have guys on tape.
Yeah, the video. I didn't answer that part, but absolutely, that's something that we had to really go back and try and. The guys that aren't playing their senior year, you go back and you watch the junior tape again, you get as much information as you can. Some of them are doing, workouts and things like that, but yeah, there's no substitute for that. I mean, there just isn't, but I don't know that there's any way around that. I mean, if they're not playing, and then you really have the tape you have to go on and the evaluations and the recommendations and the, they talk to their coaches and counselors and just about their character. And you do the best that you can in those instances, because as you mentioned, they're just not all playing this year.
Well, next week, we'll have another podcast with Coach Wilcox. We'll get a little more detail about specific positions. Some of those obviously still up for grabs, depth chart, and certainly talk about the Washington Huskies game number one, 7:30. On November the 7th. Coach, appreciate. Oh, one final thing. You've got Election Day coming up next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal, maybe as big as we've seen in a long, long time. And so around the country, a lot of student athletes have kind of gotten together and got more involved, more knowledgeable. What do you do on that day, and how do you prepare for that day, or have the preparation for your student athletes to get ready for that big day?
Yeah, about over a month ago, maybe a month and a half or 2 months ago, some of our staff here, we all decided it'd be really good to help these guys get registered. So we produced a living document that we sent out. So no matter if you're from California or Hawaii or Texas or wherever, there was a pretty simple way to get registered. And then just providing them some information on what the issues are that they're voting on, the people involved. And our role isn't to, you know, push a person or a stance. Our role is to help them get the information so they can decipher it and make their own decisions. And so we've tried to do that, and we won't be practicing that day. A lot of guys are going to be, voting or already have voted. So it is big. And I think the students this day and age, and especially in this environment, are much more informed on what's going on, or have been, you know, the media, it gets to them quicker because the devices and the phone. So they hear a lot more than they've ever heard, and much more than we ever did way back when.
Well, that's for sure. Certainly a lot of access to that. It'll be a big day. No question about it. Hey, Coach, appreciate it. Thanks for the time. Look forward to talking to you next week as we get ready for the big game.
All right. Good talking to you. Thanks, Todd.
All right. Head coach Justin Wilcox, Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. We've got 20 straight weeks, okay, from now until mid-March. And so we'll be every week, including the holidays as well. Well, joining me now is maybe the most busy man on the campus here the last 6-7 months, and that's Athletic Director Jim Knowlton. Jim, appreciate you being with us today. And just let's just start by, you know, in August, the Pac-12 said there'd be no sports, basically. What changed to allow the Pac-12 to, at least for now, start a football season a week from Saturday?
Well, Todd, first off, thanks for having me today. I appreciate it. And certainly my best wishes go out to all of our listeners who I hope you and your families are staying safe during these challenging times. You know, when in August, when we decided to postpone the fall seasons, there were three major reasons. You know, one was the spread of the virus in the areas where Pac-12 schools were. One was the fact we just couldn't get testing in the quantities and the frequency that we needed to make sure that we were keeping the virus out of our locker rooms and out of our teams. And then there was concern about myocarditis. It had just become a topic that people were talking about. And as a result, the chancellors and the presidents of the Pac-12 made what I would call a gutsy, difficult decision, but it was all based on the fact that we really had the student athlete safety as the number one priority. In September, at the end of September, on the 24th of September, after recommendations from our medical staff, they recommended that because of three things that changed, we could now go back. You know, one of them was the spread of the virus had really gone down in all those areas and all the Pac-12 areas. In our area of Berkeley, we've gone down from the governor's purple to red to orange, and the spread is really in control now. We had access to daily testing for our student athletes that were in high-risk sports, which is the contact sports. And then the third was there was a lot more known about myocarditis. The prevalence was nowhere near what they originally thought. And there was a way to detect and to make sure that anyone who had the virus who had an inflammation of the heart, we managed in a different way. And so based on that, our medical experts recommended that the chancellors and the CEOs resume sports. And for us, it meant football and our winter sports, you know, including men's and women's swimming, men's and women's gymnastics, men's and women's basketball, and our indoor track and field programs. And so that's what we've done. They're all back on campus, and we're off and running.
We are up and running. And let's first of all talk about football. People are excited, obviously. A team that was 8-5 a year ago, won the Axe back, won its bowl game, did so many good things. Now we're going to have a 7-game schedule with five division games, one crossover game against Arizona State. And then the 7th game, hopefully, will be the conference championship game. But it is, if it's not the conference championship game, North versus South, they've decided to go with the second place team in both divisions will play each other at a home site and go on down the list. So 7 games. How confident are you that we can get all seven games in?
Well, I would say that I'm cautiously optimistic. You know, I'm looking around the country. I'm watching teams like Baylor who have had to have five of their games canceled. And, I just think even if you are diligent, even if you have incredible protocols, even if you are conservative in all you do, there's always going to be a chance that someone, you know, picks up the virus, and then contact tracing requires you to quarantine, you know, large numbers. So I'm optimistic, but I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll be able to play. And, you know, I know that our coaches and our medical staff has done just a phenomenal job with our student athletes. And I'm proud of our student athletes who have been very, very disciplined during the process. And, you know, if you were to come to a practice and saw the process of a student athlete showing up, dropping dirty laundry off, picking up clean laundry, getting their temperature testing, getting their daily test, all of their meeting rooms are outside, socially distanced. I mean, it's a very, very deliberate process to reduce interaction and to reduce the possibility of the spread of the virus. So we've been very safe, very cautious, and I'm hopeful that that will pay dividends and allow us to play football games on Saturdays.
Well, and this has been a team effort, to say the least. And I have not been able to go to a practice. Hope to be able to go to one sometime in the next week or so, just because they want to keep everybody in a bubble, so to speak, I guess is the best way to describe it. But with regard to the student athletes, everybody on campus and everybody in the athletic department has been involved some way or another. I mean, my understanding is that at some point in time, you've been up there taking temperatures and being involved. And I mean, it's been a collective team effort for everybody. Talk about how everybody's had to pitch in and get it done.
Well, I think it is a good time to say that, the chancellor has been magnificent during these challenging times. Her leadership during, you know, a time where there's way more questions than answers has been absolutely brilliant. And she's been a great partner for everybody on campus. And so it starts with her. We've been very, very transparent in how we're trying to do the things that we're trying to do. And we've relied on so many across campus, whether it's UHS, our University Health Services, to our own medical staff, to many of the experts from our faculty, who, like John Swartzberg, who is, you know, an absolute world-renowned expert. We've brought him in, and he's helped us both at the Pac-12 level and at our athletic department level. We repurposed so many people in our department. Many of our assistant coaches are working to help us open up facilities, you know, do temperature tests, helping with all those things that are necessary, because cleaning is, you know, taking on a new, you know, as far as what we have to do after every time a practice takes place, every time someone touches something. So yeah, I've been proud of our team. It's been a huge team effort, and I've been very proud of our coaches who have done yeoman's work to keep people involved, keep our student athletes engaged, all because we really want to make this safe. And we want not only the student athletes, but their parents and anybody associated with the program to know that we're doing this the right way.
In fact, I was noticing a video from the men's basketball team, which along with the women's basketball team is back on campus. And we'll talk about some of the other sports momentarily. But as far as cleansing, I mean, Mark Fox was there. He's cleaning off, you know, the basket standards, and the players have to, you know, clean the basketballs for a long time. They couldn't share basketballs. They were outdoors on the tennis courts. The men's tennis coach Peter Wright was out there helping them clean things to just get some kind of a practice. And so it has been a phenomenal effort. One of the questions a lot of people have is, at any point in time, can we expect to see fans in the stands? I mean, there's been this push to have, you know, parents at least, and maybe parents and friends, but any chance, any folks other than the some of the broadcasters and the folks that have to run game day and the players themselves have a chance to be inside the stadium?
So right now, the chancellors and presidents of the Pac-12 voted that we wouldn't have any fans for football. So that was their vote, and a good decision based on all that we knew. They have said that they're going to relook that decision sometime before January 1st. But right now, that's where we are. They've also said that each team, home and away, could have four tickets per student athlete to bring in friends and family if local public health authorities allowed that. And we've gone to our Berkeley Public Health, and based on, you know, the current situation in Berkeley, that has not been approved. And so we're really going to be at minimum manning, you know, absolutely just bare bones as far as what it takes to put on a game and to run the scoreboard and to make sure that we've got officials and everybody else as part of the game. And that's where we are. And it could change or it could stay the same, you know, for our three home games, which, you know, we're going to have three home games in 5 weeks. And that's the end of the home season unless we earn a, you know, we earn a spot, you know, earn a spot at the end of the year for the seventh game or the Pac-12 championship.
But that doesn't mean that the stands will necessarily be empty, because my understanding is people can actually participate and have their faces in the stands. Tell us about this cardboard cutout program.
So it's been really, really fun. You know, I've had some folks say, Jim, I've had this home streak with the big game going for 25 years. How are you going to do this to me and not let me keep it going? And so we came up with cutouts that are waterproof, that all you have to do is send the picture and your cutout will be at the big game and be at all of our games. And then we'll get Justin or I to sign it and send it to you after the season's over. And you'll be able to say that you were in fact at the big game and you kept your streak alive. I just had one of our alums just bought eight of them. And he bought eight of them. And when I saw the pictures that were going to be each of them, it was all pictures of his dog. So eight different pictures of his dog will be cheering on the Cal Bears inside the stadium this year, which was pretty funny.
That'd be something you find at a Cleveland Browns game. Their end zone is the dog pound. So we'll have our own dog pound at Memorial Stadium. How about Tightwad Hill and the cannon? I mean, are we going to have people up there? Is the cannon going to go off when we score touchdowns?
So we're going to move the cannon down into the stadium since there won't be fans in the stadium. And we're working with the university on Tightwad Hill. I would say that we're probably not going to have anybody up at Tightwad Hill. I mean, the concerns are, you know, groups of people in close contact up there. And, you know, we think it could get, you know, could get out of control very quickly. So I think what you're going to find is there won't be fans up at Tightwad Hill for at least our home games for the first three home games.
Let's step away from football a little bit, talk about some of the other items on your very large plate. The Cameron Institute up and running since we last talked. You're hiring a new associate AD for DEIB. You've got the Racial Justice Council. I mean, so you got a lot of other things that have been going on while you're trying to get a football season started.
You know, one of the things we decided really early on as a department is we were going to manage this crisis, but at the same time, we were going to continue to do all the other things that we've been doing that had us on this upward trajectory. You know, our strategic planning, our Cameron Institute, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, all of those things in our strategic plan that were aspirational for us, we weren't going to stop doing just because we were dealing with a crisis. And I feel like when the lights go back on, we're going to be in such a great spot because of all the work we're doing right now, whether it be the gender equity work and the facilities that we'll be adding in beach volleyball and softball, to the diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging that you just brought up, and the new hire that we're working to close. We had 125 applicants, just absolutely incredible. And, you know, and then some of the things we're doing to continue to support our student athletes. And I think all of those are going to put us in such a good spot. Because we didn't just focus on the crisis. We've spent a lot of time on the crisis, but we've also kept all of these aspirational goals in play and have worked towards them during this pandemic.
You mentioned softball, and last week and in the news this week were Ron and Stephanie Rivera, part of a number of people over the course of the last 7, 8, 9 months that have stepped up to the plate literally and made some wonderful donations. Ron, this last week, or this current week, had his last chemotherapy session, got his a big win for the Washington football team this weekend as well. And he and his wife have donated $500,000 to make some things happen in a big, big way for you.
No, it's so amazing. I could not be more thankful of Ron and Stephanie and then the many others that have continued to help us during these challenging times. As everyone knows, you know, we started this roll-on campaign that's going to help us get through this year. And we've just asked our supporters to help us and stretch just a little, because we know that this is a one-year thing. We're gonna survive this. We're gonna get through not having fans and not selling tickets and all the challenges that that means to our budget. But we know we're gonna be back. We're on a great trajectory. We balanced our budget last year, which was just a great victory for us. And you know, the things that Ron and Stephanie did and Bill and Trudy Osfall and so many others, just makes you feel really good, feel proud of the people that are associated with Cal and their love for Cal and our student athletes and our program. So yeah, I couldn't be more thankful and appreciative of all. And, you know, and last week to be able to make that announcement with Ron and Stephanie, and then also the big win and his health, which is looking much better. You just feel blessed and I'm very thankful for those kind of teammates.
Yeah, you couldn't do it without them. There's no question about it. So now that you've got some of your student athletes back, we talked football starts next week, hosting the Washington Huskies, then at Arizona State, at Oregon State, big game, Oregon, Washington State, seventh game. But men's and women's basketball is less than a month around a corner as well. November 25th, the start date. And we'll talk to Mark Fox a little bit more, and also Sharman Smith, about all the things they've had to go through trying to put a schedule together. But who all is on campus right now with regard to your student athletes? And when might the other student athletes that are not in the basketball and football programs possibly be able to start competing?
Sure. So on campus right now, we have our football, our two basketballs. We also have, as I said, our indoor track and field program. We've got our men's and women's gymnastics program, and then men's and women's swimming and diving. So they're all here. We're daily testing the contact sports, which are football and men's and women's basketball. Berkeley Public Health and CDC does not require daily testing for those other sports. They're individual sports. You know, in the case of track and field, they're outside, they're socially distanced. So we don't need to do this. We don't have the same testing requirements as we do for a contact sport outside, or a contact sport like basketball inside. And so what we're doing now is we're really looking at how do we bring the rest of the sports back in a way that allows us to absorb, you know, the additional testing and cleaning and all of that, and be able to support, you know, what could be 29 sports, you know, starting January at the same time. We've never done that before. It's a challenge, but our staff has done a great job deconflicting facilities, deconflicting medical support, deconflicting testing, all of the things that are going to be, you know, just a real challenge. And, you know, and I said it to our staff sort of tongue in cheek. I said, if all the coaches are only mildly angry with me at the end of this spring season, I'm going to feel really good. If they're just mildly angry, then we've done a pretty good job, because no one's going to get everything they want when it's that packed. And so, you know, we'll start bringing them back. Our plan is, you know, at the beginning of January. Right now, we're doing a lot of the things that we can for the students on those teams not back, like doing their medical physicals and things that will help reduce the load, you know, come the beginning of January. And I think most of our coaches are working on how they backwards plan and, you know, prepare so that their first games, they've still had a good prep. And as you can imagine, most of the students are doing some great work at home or wherever they are, you know, still playing golf, still playing tennis, still, you know, working out. So that's what it looks like. It's going to be a busy spring, and it'll be a little bit of a pandemonium spring, but I think we've got a pretty good plan going into it to start.
Well, planning and execution are the two key ingredients in athletics or in business or just about anything else in life. And you guys have done a terrific job to get everybody in place to have a football season and then basketball and from there. So hats off to you and your entire staff for getting this thing ready to go. Jim, we appreciate you taking the time. Hopefully we'll talk to you again soon. And as always, go Bears.
Todd, thanks for everything. Keep up the great work and go Bears.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jim. Have a good
one. Take care.
That does it for this week's podcast. We appreciate you listening. Next week, we'll hear from Coach Wilcox and one of the football players as well as they get ready for the season opening game against the Washington Huskies. Until then, I'm Todd McKimmon. As always, go Bears.
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.